Live from New York City, it's The Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. What a program today. I told you at the beginning of the year that we would be having the finest minds on the planet. Wherever they are, we will find them. These will not be people that in all likelihood you've ever heard or read anything about. They are part of the new group of individuals stepping forward out of the shadows of academia and law and out of activism and showing that they're bringing their skills, their knowledge, their insights to help us in our effort of reclaiming our freedoms of choice, our freedoms of health, and honoring the planet. Today you're going to hear one of those individuals, Professor James Lyons Wheeler. He has conducted more than 100 different studies in the molecular biology and the mimicry of molecular biology, especially the unseen risks in vaccines. Interesting, because he did much of this work with every single department you could imagine at the University of Pittsburgh, and finding incredibly important results. The mainstream media never touched it. We will. We'll show you step by step why the entire edifice of the public health scandal of the safety and efficacy of vaccines is wrong. That will be today. Also today, why the flu vaccine failed. It was only 10% effective. 10%? If you just took vitamin A, 5,000 units a day, and vitamin C, 5,000 milligrams a day, you'd be far more protected than that. So we'll get to that. Also today, I'm beginning a new series about examining the deep state in all of its manifestations. You're going to hear from one of the architects of the deep state, the actual person who created much of the National Security Agency's spying mechanism. He was there at the beginning. He was the person that engineered it. You're going to hear him giving us, well, today I'll probably do about 15 minutes of a discussion. It'll be over an entire week. And even after he tells you what is going on now, this is all information you have not heard. Brand new information. So you won't want to miss one of the top architects of the deep state and the National Security Agency talking about how they're completely wrong about everything they're doing. They're criminal. And what we should know about it. That's today. Also, I'll be having Elizabeth McCormick on, talking about what are your issues that you'd like to address, and you've asked her, and she'll let me know. I'll address them. Try to address one, maybe, if it's a, depending upon the question I get, if it's a short answer, a couple. I want to get those in each day. There'll be no time for talk back today because we have so much to share, the latest on health and healing, and I'll do part two of why I believe that the left and the Democratic Party should reconsider putting forth Oprah Winfrey. She is certainly charming. She's beloved by millions of people, but she's completely and totally unqualified to be president. She would be no more qualified in the technical aspects or the diplomatic aspects. The fact that she could be nice and polite and civil, that's fine. But that gets back to what is at the heart and core and the Achilles of the entire left movement, and that is identity politics. If we're not yet sick to death of identity politics, we should be. We need a woman for president. We need a black for president. We need a gay for president. We need a transgender for president. Why don't we run Bruce Jenner? He'd be just as qualified as any human being that's ever lived, right? Identity politics, it's insane. It's insane. We don't need a black, a gay. We don't need a lesbian or transgender. We don't need a Marxist, a communist, an anarchist. We don't need any of these people. What we need is a person that represents with insight, intelligence, compassion, empathy, and understanding, and history, and civics, and is literate, the interest of every person in America and the world community. That's what we need. Anything less than that is a complete self-defeating purpose. I'll get to that as well. Let's begin. And we always begin with the latest on health and healing. I work a lot with people with Alzheimer's disease. And of course, the more people who develop, let's say, the beginning stages of Alzheimer's, which we call dementia, because dementia leads into full-blown Alzheimer's. If you put those two numbers together, you're not dealing with 5 million. You're dealing with more likely 15 million Americans right now have pre-Alzheimer's or beginning of dementia. Several of my friends do. And you talk about hard to work with. Try to work with a family member or a friend. Impossible. No matter what you do, they will say no and self-sabotage it. And this is the problem. We have all these people in our lives that we love and we want to see keep their cognition, but they don't. So what can we do? Well, first we can understand what are the different contributing factors. Maybe if we work with them as if this were a puzzle, and each time we can, we try to introduce a new piece to the puzzle that heals. One part of this puzzle that causes memory loss, causes our aging brain to malfunction, is anxiety. Now, this is a study from Brigham and Women's Hospital, and it shows that anxiety is an early indicator of Alzheimer's disease. And why? Because anytime you have anything in your body that creates an elevation in the amyloid, A-M-Y-L-O-I-D, amyloid beta, B-E-T-A, levels, that's a plaque, and it is no different than the plaque that is laid down in your arterial walls that causes your arteries to shrink, increasing blood pressure, increasing risk of clot. This is simply doing the same thing in your brain. Now, on top of that, you have these tiny little white specks that is created when you have a microstroke. Now, what is a microstroke? A microstroke is when you get angry, when you yell, when you scream, when you lose your temper and you just go nuts. Okay, half hour later, it's over and you think, okay, no harm done. No, a lot of harm done. Not only are you creating these microstrokes, you're bursting tiny little capillaries, you're causing the disruption of the mitochondria, you're snapping the dendrites in the brain, you're really doing a lot of damage to your brain. You're creating massive oxidative stress, but your whole heart, you can set off your heart rhythm, you can create heart irregular rhythms. Oh, yes. Every time you lose your temper and you get into one of those rages, you're killing yourself. Just remember that. And so what we're now seeing is that the findings support the hypothesis that neuropsychiatric symptoms could represent the early manifestation of Alzheimer's. And just let me give you a brief overview. Alzheimer's disease is a neurodegenerative condition that causes the decline in cognitive function and the inability to carry out daily life activities. And past studies have suggested depression and other neuropsychiatric symptoms may be predictors of Alzheimer's disease progression during its preclinical phase, meaning when you're younger. So the younger you are, where you get yourself into anxiety positions, that speeds up how long it'll take you to get to dementia or Alzheimer's, during which time the brain deposits what is called a fibrillary amyloid and pathological tau accumulate in your brain. Now, this phase can occur more than 20 years before you actually have even mild cognitive impairment. And investigators at Brigham and Women's Hospital examined the association of brain amyloid beta and longitudinal measures of depression and depressive symptoms in cognitively normal older adults, and their findings were published in the American Journal of Psychiatry. So here's the bottom line. When you get higher levels of the amyloid beta, you're going to have almost always increased symptoms of anxiety, and we can reverse it. When you have anxiety in life, and to where you get maybe sadness or loss of interest, anxiety symptoms, and they begin to increase over a period of time and you adapt to them, you think it's normal. Let's say you're anxious because of insecurity at work or because you can't pay back your student bills. All the normal reasons that people get anxious, and many of them are very real situations because today we have debtors' prisons. You don't pay your bills, you can end up in jail. Which is, think of the rhythm of this. It's a reverse circular logic. I'm so poor I can't pay a $40 parking ticket. Okay, we've got a solution. Let's come with an armed SWAT team of 11 people, break open your door, shoot your dog, point a gun at your head, and say, you're under arrest, and we're going to take you to a private prison. A judge is going to sentence you. You'll have to go through the prison system, and then you end up with a probation officer. It's the private prison person that works for a private corporation, and now you owe $1,300. But I didn't have $40. If I didn't have $40 to pay my bill, how am I expected to pay $1,300? We have a solution. If you can't pay your $40 bill, so we arrested you, and we put you in jail, and you can't pay your $1,300 bill, now we're going to give you compounding interest, so now you owe us $4,000. But how can I work to pay back anything if you have me incarcerated? We have a solution for that. In our unique judicial system in America, with our unique state and local and laws, and our local ordinances, and our sheriffs, and Justice of the Peace, and other criminals within the system, we're going to keep you in jail indefinitely. But what crime have I committed that I should be incarcerated? You didn't pay your bill. But we outlawed debtors' prisons in the 1830s. It's irrelevant. We have the power, and you see the president, any president. Did you see Barack Obama? Did you see Eric Holder? Did you see Bill Clinton? Did you see George Bush? Did you see, well, you're not going to see Donald Dump, because that's what I'm calling him now, Donald Dump. He looks like a human dump. So, and acts like one. There's no redeeming value I can find whatsoever. I mean, if you knock off 1,000 categories of positives, zero. So how do you deal with anyone who is completely an intellectually incompetent person? There's a void. You can't fill it. So what are you going to do when everyone who could have spoken up, could have demonstrated, doesn't? Americans don't. We're very selfish at this moment. We're into our own stuff. So if you're in prison because you couldn't afford to pay a bill, there's no advocates on your behalf. The legislators are not. Look at Congress. Look at Democrats and Republicans. Look where they get their money. Do you really think that they're going to come and help you? No one's going to help you. So what that does is, in our society, we look at this happening around us. We want to live in denial that it's happening. We try to hide it. You know, it's not me. I can pay my bills, so I'm okay. Oh, you're okay? When the early 1920s in Italy, the Italians were looking out at the black shirts saying, it's okay, I'm not one of their enemies. I'm not one of the communist activists, agitators. In the 1930s, people looked out the window and says, they're not coming for me today. They did in time, and they will hear in time. You know, as you'll hear a little later on from William Binney about, they've already come for you. In fact, the irony of it is, you talk about cognitive dissonance, they not only have come for you, they own you. Not a thing in your life do they not know about. And that's before the artificial intelligence starts coming into your brain. They already know everything about you. So we're not just looking now at being a little anxious. We're looking at almost every point in our life having some endpoint where we cannot control. So that creates anxiety. That anxiety then creates oxidative stress. The oxidative stress then creates free radicals. The free radicals then creates cytokines. The cytokines then creates all these inflammatory markers, tumor necrosis factor alpha, etc., and that lays down plaque in your brain. Hence, i.e., anxiety at one point in your life can speed up Alzheimer's in another part of life, and that distance is like an accordion. As you're playing one side, you're pressing in the other side, and wow, we're now seeing people in their 50s and 40s and 30s suffering from prematurely aged brains. That's what it means. Fast food makes your immune system more aggressive. Institute of Innate Immunity, University of Bonn. I just got off the phone just before I did the show. I did a Skype interview for an upcoming program with one of the great scientists on viruses in the body and what it does to our body. Anyhow, he was talking about if people only knew, Gary, that the immune system, you have two immune systems. Of course, we have two immune systems, but most people only know of one. And they're not looking at the fact that when you eat fast foods, you're actually speeding up an autoimmune reaction. Hence, you're more susceptible to allergies and infections and upper respiratory tract infections and colds and the flu because your immune system has been crippled by the very foods that you eat and the beverages you drink. You could go out and celebrate and have a fun evening and drinking alcohol. Now the next day you end up with some phlegm in the throat, raspy throat. And you've just defeated your immune system enough so that now viruses and bacteria that normally the body would live in balance with or excrete, kill, are now growing. The immune system reacts similarly to high-fat and high-calorie diets as to bacterial infections. Now listen to what I just said, just kind of formulated again. Your immune system, when you have a bacterial infection, you have a viral infection, it takes a real tumble. Your body's doing all it can to expel it. You're getting diarrhea. You're getting lots of mucus coming out of your nose and throat. That's the body's capacity to expel. You're getting a fever, which is actually a good thing. It's trying to expel it. Here's the new research, brand new, out of the Institute of Innate Immunity, University of Bonn, that I'm sharing with you. It's been published in no American media whatsoever. It is published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell. Your immune system has now been proven to respond as if you have a bacterial or viral infection if you have high fat or high calories in your diet. So the average person has high fat and high calories every day, sometimes several times a day. A pizza, a hamburger, cheeseburger, french fries, that's high fat, high calories. And that's why our immune system is so always challenged. That's why we seem to be always sick. And what's particularly disturbing, unhealthy food seems to make the body's defenses more aggressive in the long term. Even long after switching to a healthy diet, inflammation towards innate immunity stimulation is more pronounced. And this long-term change can be involved in the development of arterial sclerosis and diabetes, diseases linked to our specific Western diet consumption. So even when you give up a bad diet, you still have not reprogrammed your immune system. That's going to take you about a year. And I'll do a program in the near future on just reprogramming your immune system so that you can not overreact, because that'll keep you sick. From Johns Hopkins University, their hospital, they ask a question. Why is the United States the most dangerous of wealthy nations for a child to be born into? We're dead last, by the way. So it's to me, it's no surprise that the United States ranks absolutely dead last in child mortality among the world's wealthiest nations. That's been true for decades. According to data from the World Health Organization and the Global Human Mortality Database, the problems go all the way back to the 1960s. Why? It was during that decade that the U.S. infant mortality rate, meaning babies who don't live 1 year of age, and the U.S. mortality rate, and those that live to one, from 1 to 19, began to exceed the combined rates of the other 19 richest nations. So if the United States had performed as well as its peer countries between 1961 and 2010, that means that more than 600,000 childhood deaths could have been avoided. This was published in the Journal of Health Affairs. Quote, "The care of children is a basic moral responsibility of our society. The United States outspends every other nation on health care per capita for children, yet outcomes remain poor." And it goes into this. I've looked at this very carefully. The answers are simple. We confuse. We think that we're doing children good when we're giving them antibiotics for diseases that they have that came from vaccines. You give children vaccines when you're adversely affecting their innate immune system, and what's going to happen is they're going to end up with chest infections, lung infections, asthma, chronic ear infections, and allergies. We then treat those. The total cost of medications and doctor visits for all that is what we call health care for children. It is not as disease cause for children. So that's what we have to understand. So that's why we have to change our entire national health program. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Now, I want to give you some thoughts about Oprah before we go to our guest. Clearly, Oprah has a large fan base, and since the entire corporate-dominated Democratic Party and many left people belong to it, Mother Jones, The Nation, and MSNBC, and Council on Foreign Relations, and all the mainstream media, CNN, and even though they do not subscribe to it ideologically, they certainly will support it because it's in their economic benefits, and that's the entire medical industrial complex, the banking interest, the pharmaceutical industry, the military industry. They all are going to be on the side of this because they know that Oprah would in no way, shape, or form be threatening to them. Why? Because Oprah has never been a threat to them. Only one little incident where she was concerned about cattle, and boy, they took her to court, and that was the end of that activism. But there are and have been very legitimate celebrities who I just want to give a little credit to because these are the people who actually have put their careers on the line to talk about issues that are important to the larger public good. And I support that. You know, so anytime I see someone who could maybe not get a contract anymore, I think that that's important that we recognize those individuals who have said, okay, I believe in speaking up for animal rights or whatever it is. Let me just acknowledge them because you'll never see, never have seen, never will see the neoliberal, supportive of fascism, supportive of wars, ignorant of foreign policy, ignorant of our own government mechanics, but very attuned to celebrity worship. In fact, I was just at a counter of a store yesterday, and there on the counter was Oprah's magazine. And once again, as in every single issue, she's on the cover. Just her. What kind of person, what does it tell you about a person that needs to see their own face on every single magazine that they have? What kind of insecurity is that? So, but also, always showing up for identity politics, yes, but never showing up for an important cause that could cause you the loss of sponsors or put you on the wrong side of a political issue. One of my top favorites would be Daryl Hannah. I think she's an exceptional human being. Good for her. So wherever you are in this world, Daryl, I'm sure that it has cost you, not that you needed to face that reality, but you did. I'm sure that there are people who don't like you because you have been one of the most politically savvy activists. You're a smart person on political issues. You've been a vegan since you were young lady. All of your lifestyle is based upon clean, green energies and sources. You've been arrested many times, especially in protecting farmers, both rural and urban. You chained yourself to a walnut tree in South Central Farm in Los Angeles for 3 weeks to prevent farmers' evictions. How noble is that? How absolutely noble. You worked for years against sex slavery at a time when Oprah's best friend was the biggest sexual predator in Hollywood history, and everyone knew it. So please don't try to use that "I didn't know." That's just like Tarantino's own partner, his own live-in partner, was in a Harvey Weinstein film and was sexually challenged, and she told Tarantino, "The whole idea, because I benefit from something, I don't want to put myself in jeopardy of losing what I benefit." Then, okay, fine. So you don't want to lose your job, Megan Fox, and all the other women at Fox. You don't want to lose it because there was sexual predation. But there is the moment where you show the difference between being a person who's an adaptive, aggressive, life energy on their downside, who's an absolute rank, gross opportunist. But when you no longer have that contract, when you're no longer there, then you turn around and you sue the person, you say, "Sexism, why didn't you walk out that day with a sign, a placard, and say, 'You can fire me from my job, but I'm standing up for the rights of not just myself, but all the women in this environment. I'm going to show the media who show up, whoever does, I'll send out a press release. I'm going to be there alone in front of Fox when all those people walk in, including other women, and say, 'Other women, if you two have been assigned to being a sexual object from this misogynist group of people, come join me, stand as sisters together.'" But no one did that, not one. So we refuse to look at the true nature. It's just what I said the other day. If you're going to wear black, then wear a black that disguises everything that could be objectified sexually. So you're standing in solidarity for that which is truly the spiritual feminist. Instead, they buy $10,000 very sexually objectified outfits. Well, then what is the purpose of it? Then it's just another public relations stunt. So Daryl Hannah would not lower herself to saying, "I'm keeping a job," even though there's sexual predation in the workplace. And, oh, 40 years from now, I'll complain about it. No, when you see something's wrong, then in that moment, you deal with it. If you don't, then that contributes to the problem. It doesn't resolve it. That's my only personal point of view, but I just want to thank Daryl Hannah because everything in her life represents her conviction that she's not afraid to sacrifice. So she worked for years against sexual slavery. She traveled around the world to make a documentary about it. And she was arrested along with climate scientist James Hansen in 2009, protesting mountaintop removal in West Virginia. She was arrested in 2011 in front of the White House, where she was standing in opposition to the Keystone Pipeline. I think Chris Hedges was also there at that time. And she was also present with her partner, Neil Young, at Standing Rock. and she was the executive producer of the documentary about climate change denial called Greedy Living Lying Bastards. And she was arrested in 2012 protesting Trans-Canada Pipeline through Wood County in Texas and blocking heavy construction equipment. In 2013, she was arrested in front of the White House with Robert Kennedy Jr. during climate change protests against Keystone. And she's a member of the World Future Council, which includes progressive activists like Vandana Shiva and Jane Goodall and Maude Barlow and Frances Moore LePay. Do you see Oprah Winfrey's name on that? No. When Oprah opened up her own school, once again, it's this massive ego, this narcissism of identity politics. She had to make it about her and how much millions she gave, tens of millions of dollars, this one school. So I did the math at the time because I support independent water projects to get water purification pumps in villages in India, in Africa, for the same amount of money that she gave to about 100 and I think 100 and more or less 163 children at one school to have nice, clean uniforms and school teachers, which was later mixed up in a lot of sexual scandal, though that wasn't her fault. She could have had over 2 million African children getting textbooks and teachers to teach them also. 163, 2 million. That's the difference. You got to get beyond the PR. I also want to say shout out to Susan Sarandon, who I know. And she's another one of the more politically and socially active celebrities. She is extremely insightful about the body politic. She was also a UN Goodwill Ambassador. And she was a Ralph Nader supporter, and she co-chaired Nader's National Steering Committee in his 2000 election. She also participated and helped lead the anti-Iraq war protests. She's a strong LBG activist. She received the Action Against Hunger Humanitarian Award. She serves on the advisory committee for the activist group Racism Watch. She's a member and supporter of Code Pink, Medea Benjamin's organization. She attended Occupy Wall Street. She was active in ending the death penalty and cruel mass incarceration and part of the group trying to save Richard Glossop's life on death row in Oklahoma. She supported Bernie Sanders, then switched to Jill Stein. And in an interview with The Guardian published in November 2017, Susan said about Hillary Clinton, quote, "I did think she was very, very dangerous. We would still be fracking. We would be at war if she was present." She's correct. Danny Glover, another very, very courageous, ethical, and decent human being. And he was one of the top celebrity activists, even in college, an organizer for the largest student strike in U.S. history at San Francisco State University that helped create the first Department of Black Studies in the United States University. He was arrested with George Clooney protesting Sudan's genocide in Darfur. He was very active in the anti-Iraq war efforts. He's a union activist, including support for United Farm Workers, most of whom are migrants. He participated in Occupy Wall Street. He was a board member of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. He was a part of Dean Baker's think tank and recognition as a chieftain among elders in Nigeria for his African activism. He was supporter of Chavez in Venezuela and Brazil's left wing, and Castro in Cuba. He was a board member of the TELSER, which is Venezuela's Pan-African network. So on every level, Danny Glover is a true, highly educated, completely insightful political and social activist. And then you have George Clooney, and he's a human rights activist working with Not On Our Watch Project, which exposes mass genocide, and help with smaller nonprofits for relief and aid to Haitian earthquake victims. He was arrested in 2012 protesting conditions in Sudan outside the Sudan embassy with his wife is a Lebanese attorney, Amal, and who's Julian Assange's lawyer. And she has a very impressive track record of persecuted civil and human rights clients. And she taught at Columbia Law School and Human Rights Institute. Neil Young, famous rock musician. I'm sure most people who enjoy music know about Neil's work. He remains extraordinarily popular to this day. Neil Young was, it was Crosby, Nash, and Young, and earlier with Buffalo Springfield back in the 1960s. He's a longtime environmental activist. He was the founder of Farm Aid back in 1985 to preserve the welfare of small farmers with Willie Nelson, who I think is terrific. And he was a big supporter of Native American rights and the anti-pipeline and fracking activists. And last year, he released an entire album, The Monsanto Years, denouncing the company. Well, when did Oprah do any of the above? She could have done a whole expose. Oprah could have taken her legions of her followers to any of these embassies and protested. She could have protested apartheid in Israel. She didn't. She hasn't visited the Palestinians. She hasn't gone to Darfur. She didn't visit any of the places down in Haiti to see what the conditions were. Then she would have found out about the truth of her friends, close personal friends, Bill and Hillary Clinton. They're part of the problem, not the solution. She could have done an investigation on what happened to the $13 billion that Bill and Hillary Clinton got in their foundation and then kept, and only their own close personal friends and supporters got the money. But the people of Haiti got less than 1%. They kept 99%. She would have known that. Remember, when you have $2 to $3 billion and you have open access to any place and anything, then it's not that you could not get the truth, it's you don't want the truth. So if a person doesn't want the truth now because it would embarrass her close personal friends and disrupt the kind of the strange, bizarre world that they all live in of denialism, and then is that the kind of person you'd want for president? So, yeah. No. And then we got Natalie Portman. Natalie Portman is an animal rights activist. She promotes veganism. She's involved in the anti-poverty initiative in the United States and Uganda and Guatemala and Ecuador. She's a spokesperson for WE Foundation and formerly Free the Children, which is an educational foundation for impoverished areas of the United States and elsewhere. And by the way, if I am willing to put money out of my pocket and go into any city in the United States and to ghettoize it, at least one block, that's all I could afford, but that's still a lot, with $2 to $3 billion, imagine she could de-ghettoize a large area. Hasn't done one, unless it's to get a plaque on a name of a building someplace. Morgan Freeman, another guy. He works with global organizations like One Earth to raise awareness about climate change and environmental destruction. He engaged in more progressive organizations outside the media to halt racism and promote awareness of Black history. He's active in supporting beekeepers to protect the bee honeybees. He's also a beekeeper himself, by the way. Ashley Judd, she's very active in wildlife protection and is a part of Defenders of Wildlife Action Fund. And she challenged Sarah Palin's environmental record in Alaska. Also on women's rights and employment and developmental projects and education in girls. A member of the Enough Project. And also she represents a group that tries to help those in the Congo. And she has a master's from Harvard Kennedy School of Government. So she's a really strong activist who deserves respect for her work. Mark Ruffalo, he's a clean energy activist, mostly an activist against fracking with his charity organization, Water Defense, which is the main funder of the green organization, the Solutions Project, which is pushing for 100% clean renewable energy for all members of the Artists Against Fracking. And he received, and rightly so, he deserved it, the Humanitarian Award at the Britannia Found Awards for his work in water resource conservation. So Mark is a really conscientious, good guy. Sean Penn, a lot of people don't like Sean Penn. Too bad. So before you criticize Sean Penn, why don't you get down to Haiti? Why don't you come with me and my friends in Haiti the real activists in Haiti. Come with us and let us show you the Haiti that the Clintons have never seen. All right? And the GMOs never see. They stay in that very expensive gated community that our money spent to pay for them to be in their villas. Come down to the different parts, to the farmers in Haiti, because that's where Sean Penn has been. He's a civil and human rights activist. He's strong in progressive politics, especially about our foreign policies and his support for Hugo Chavez and Raul Castro, an outspoken opponent of the U.S. wars, especially in Iraq. And he went to Iraq as an anti-war activist. He called for impeachment of Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld. Do you know what it means when you call for the impeachment? Suddenly the CIA, the National Security Agency, the Secret Service, 17 different intelligence groups are going to be looking at everything in your life, planting provocateurs in your life, and looking for any excuse to get you out of the spotlight. So you do not do these things without a cost. So Sean Penn's had the courage to stand up for those. And also, he, more than any other celebrity that I'm aware of, has helped support the people after victims of Katrina and in Haiti. And then Colin Firth and his wife, Livia, members of the Survival International that supports the rights of indigenous tribal people against multinational corporations, and big advocates of sustainable movements, including founding eco-friendly stores in London and organic zero-waste products for homes, and energy-efficient living consultant firm. And he also lobbies Hollywood to become more eco-aware. And then a really strong environmentalist, one of the best, if not the longest one out there, is Robert Redford. He works tirelessly on environmental protection and climate change and has done for 50 years. He organized the first Russian-U.S. climate change conference of scientists in the 1980s. He's a trustee at the National Resource Defense Council and a founder of the Redford Center that helps fund and create films dealing with environmental social issues. And then Richard Gere. Richard is a strong human rights activist since the early 80s when he went on his own personal fact-finding mission to Nicaragua and Honduras to get the truth about the murder of thousands, tens of thousands of citizens in the armed rebellions and U.S.-sponsored dictatorial regimes where the CIA was funding it all. And then he became involved in Buddhism and a couple of decades of providing relief to Tibetan refugees out of his own pocket. And he funds fact-finding operations on human rights crimes by Chinese in Tibet. And he was a co-founder with someone I know, Bob Thurman, Professor Thurman, at the Columbia University, of the Dalai Lama's American Culture Center, the Tibet House in New York City. And let us not forget Jane Fonda. She's been an activist for a long time. I would not agree with her positions that she took during the Vietnam War. I think they were foolish and counterproductive. She allowed herself to be used as a tool. She was not deep into understanding the consequences. But besides all that, she has later matured and has been a person that has demonstrated against Israel's occupation of the West Bank. And she's long spoken out against patriarchy and decades long as a real feminist. And Woody Harrelson. Howard Zinn is his main hero. He identifies himself as an anarchist and perhaps the largest celebrity supporter and activist for legalization of marijuana and hemp. And he regularly attends the large climate change and environmental conferences. And he once scaled the Golden Gate Bridge with members of Earth First to unfurl a banner to protect the Redwood Forest and protested both the Iraq invasions. He made it a part of his Woody Harrelson educational tour on college campuses to talk about the environment, to talk about what's wrong with our invasions overseas and regime change. And he was awarded an honorary degree from York University in Canada for his environmental education and activism. He's a raw food vegan. He supports the other organization for animals, the ASPCA. And just two more. I'm looking at running out of time. Matt Damon, who is a founder of the H2O African Foundation, is now merged with Water Partners and works in over 200 communities in 8 countries with the least safe drinking water to get them safe drinking water. I mean, look, if you did just that, if you provided 200 communities with safe drinking water, imagine the type of cholera that you would prevent, because they're also looking at safe ways of eliminating human waste, healthier, at least green latrines. You would help prevent typhus, and you would be saving a lot of people's lives. You don't hear a word about that. And he is also one of the founders, along with George Clooney and Brad Pitt, of the Not On My Watch Project, which draws attention and prevention of mass atrocities. And originally that was spurred and started in response to Darfur. And he was a spokesperson for Feeding America, an organization that supports helping poor children in the United States and in Canada and other countries. And he's a board member of Mail Stopper, a grassroots company trying to stop the waste and junk mail delivered to our homes every day. I'm looking, I got time for one last one. Barbara Streisand. I'm against her support of the Clintons. I'm against the people that she surrounds there, but she has bankrolled a lot of notable causes, especially on nuclear disarmament, women's issues, and environmental protection. So where I would say that she and I would share a strong difference about her support of the Clintons, I certainly want to acknowledge when someone supports environmental causes. Now, I have a lot more. I have another 100 people who are well-known celebrities who are risking their reputation, risking the attacks that will come against them, to stand up for something more than themselves. It's easy to write a check because you get a tax deduction, and so your publicist can say, write a check to the American Cancer Society, so we support, cancer prevention, or the Susan B. Coleman Foundation. No. These are people who are in there with their hands and their bodies and their minds, just like Jimmy Carter, who are doing good. So when a celebrity does something good at a risk, then that should be noted. And so for those who say, well, celebrities don't do anything, it's not true. A lot of celebrities may not care about anything but themselves, but there are a lot of people who do the right thing. And Oprah's not one of them. She's never done any of the things I just mentioned. Just a few more thoughts concerning the feasibility of having Oprah Winfrey for president. And please keep in mind, what she is as a human being and how she is to her audience, I'm sure they love her, they respect her, but we have to be concerned about other issues. And a few of the issues I am concerned with, aside from what I've mentioned, is something that Seth MacFarlane, he created Family Guy. And he's an extremely politically savvy person, and he said that Oprah running against Trump would be troublingly dystopian. And I would agree with that. I think the Democrats looking at Oprah as a form of denial of their complicity in the Trump phenomena and this fueling the Oprah fantasy. They want to blame Trump for everything, and indeed it's easy to blame him. But understand, had the Democrats over the last, and Republicans over the last 40 years, fulfilled their obligation to keep jobs in the United States, to help de-ghettoize America, to help with better educational standards for children, to see that all children are properly educated, to help people with tuition-free schools so there's no debt. There's all these things they could have done, and they could have gotten rid of the war on drugs and emptied out our prisons and got good programs to rehabilitate people so that they could get back into society. But they didn't. No matter who was in office, no matter what promises were made, at the end of the day, they went neoliberal. They went Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission. They went with the Council of the Business Community, the Roundtable. In other words, we went full-blown profit on everything. And that has consequences, because all the money then drifts towards those in power and their institutions. And so one day people are just so sick and tired of being lied to that they're not voting Republican, they're not voting Democrat. They're voting for someone who is against the establishment. Now, I've spoken with a lot of people who voted for Trump who do not like Trump. They're fully aware of his sleazy behavior, his misogyny, his racism, his bigotry, and his stupidity on all issues. But they, in their mind, they feel with everyone else, all the people who've been charming and politically savvy, these people made promises, and not once did they honor those promises. So the Democrats have to be held accountable to that, because they also made those promises. And also, Oprah's real career is not based on building particularly vital and progressive organizations or dealing with governance. It's only based upon a warm, telegenic personality that her watchers adore. It is the Obama phenomena all over again, except empty of any real political talent or urgent actions. And running a government is a technical job. It's not a matter of a charismatic personality that attracts wealth. Oprah's Trump without the psychopathology. And she only has a charming liberal veneer. Like Trump, she's going to be clueless on the ins and outs of American and foreign domestic politics. We should not be looking only at improving upon Trump in the next White House. Finding a better personality with a healthier psychology. Rather, we need a completely new way of running our country. One similar to a Jimmy Carter, if we had to look at another president, or a Franklin Delano Roosevelt, or Dwight Eisenhower. Oprah is not that person. Now, she may appear to be progressive, because she has a real personal stance on issues of the emotions, but not on substance. In fact, look at the other celebrities who may not be as famous and certainly not as wealthy, but who are real as far as being educated on social, environmental, human rights issues, and have put their careers at risk to make a stand. They've been arrested. Now, you can say what you want about George Clooney, but when he got himself arrested at the Sudanese embassy to protest the slaughter in Darfur, that was a courageous act. And you never know the reverberations, the consequences of what happens when you do something like that. But he did it in spite of that. And most of the celebrities, not all, but the vast majority of celebrities who are out there as activists, who are in demonstrations, have also looked at the conflict in the Middle East and are against regime change. They did not support the invasion of Libya, nor Syria, nor the regime change in Honduras, nor in Ukraine. They're aware of those issues. They look for information and then follow their truths. They also were not all pro-Israel. Many have visited the Palestinian people on the West Bank and Gaza, and they see the apartheid state there. Now, you go against Israel on any level, you can be persona non grata in Hollywood and a lot of other areas, in television, because there's an enormous lobbying machine that can cause doors not to open, opportunities to dry up. And these activists are aware of that. And I'm not aware that most are wealthy enough to challenge that, but a higher moral ground they did. And that Oprah is pro-Israel and doesn't want anything to do with the Palestinians. So we have to understand this. Oprah wants us to believe in the American dream. And she supported Clinton, both Clintons, and Obama. And never once, through her faux empathy, did she look at the consequences to the people, to the environment, to other countries. Not once. She even had George Bush on her show and used her show as a platform for promoting the invasion of Iraq. And later she could say, well, we didn't know, but with all your resources and all of your employees, you certainly could have found the truth if you wanted to. So, yes, she is a philanthropist, and she has done some good things, and she's lobbied for the National Child Protection Act, and she's a strong defender of the First Amendment. But is she presidential? Not at all. It's unfortunate that we didn't look at who was presidential. Jill Stein, Rocky Anderson, even Gary Johnson and Ralph Nader. But evidently, to those in the liberal and democratic communities, that was too extreme. That was just too much progressivism. But boy, that's what we need now more than ever. And I will give you my final thoughts on her biggest issue of why she shouldn't be a president. Mind you, you got two reality television stars who are both billionaires. One is impossibly illiterate on every issue there is, a misogynist, a racist. He is all that is wrong with human nature. The other is very likable, very pleasant to watch and listen to, well-mannered, and is easy to appreciate. But they are both complete vacuous vessels when it comes to understanding the truth of our domestic and foreign policies, the hidden agendas, and of course both massively support the neoliberal philosophy, and therefore the deep state, and therefore allow their completely different personalities to be used where it still becomes a disharmony. With Trump, you're supposed to work until you get it right, and then you don't need public assistance. And with Oprah, it's put your thoughts into the universe, and they'll come back with abundance. Here's the secret. Buy the book. And no, neither one is correct. I'm Gary Nall. We'll have our guest tomorrow that unfortunately didn't get on today. And we'll also have that person who helped create the National Security Agency on tomorrow, talking about what it means when you don't realize that you've already become a prisoner and you're not aware of how big the jail cell is. Have a nice day, everyone.